Thanks for joining us for Season 6 of the ACED IT Podcast. ACED IT is brought to you via the Justice Community Opioid Innovation Network, or JCOIN, with funding from the National Institute on Drug Abuse. I'm Danielle Rudes, your host, coming to you from Sam Houston State University in Texas and bringing you amazing science from today's top scholars and researchers in easy-to-understand language. The theme of Season 6 is diversity, equity, and inclusivity within the justice and health research field. I can't wait to share this season with you. Thanks for listening. Now, let's get started. Right now in the United States, the opioid overdose deaths are higher than the deaths related to traffic accidents. That's right. There are more people dying by overdose than car accidents. As of 2019, there were also 1.6 million Americans over the age of 12 who had an opioid use disorder. The gold standard of treatment for those Americans with an opioid use disorder is medication. While it is clear that opioid use disorders are a serious problem in our country, opioid use among the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, and asexual population, abbreviated often as LGBTQIA, is not as clear. Research has focused significantly less on opioid use among people who identify as lesbian or gay or bisexual or trans or queer or intersex or asexual or any other sexual identity other than cisgender. One study in the limited work that considers individuals with these identities, published in 2015, found that lesbian, gay, and bisexual adults had more than double the prevalence of prescription opioid use disorder and prescription opioid misuse. The same study also found three times the use of heroin and heroin use disorders in lesbian, gay, and bisexual adults. The research surrounding transgender individuals is also scant. One of the very few studies using data from 2015 showed over a third of transgender adults reported lifetime prescription medication misuse, and 28% reported misuse in the prior year. So how can we understand something that is happening, but is also something we scientifically know so little about? Well, there's a specific model known as the minority stress model. That is an evidence-based conceptual framework that can be used to better understand opioid-related differences among LGBTQIA plus populations. The minority stress model suggests that LGBTQIA plus individuals face stigma and discrimination, and those things generate stress. That stress then can lead to substance use as a coping mechanism. And there is research to support this idea. For example, some of that research finds that lesbian, gay, and bisexual people who faced higher levels of discrimination, including discrimination in healthcare, were two times more likely to have a substance use disorder. The stigma and discrimination that LGBTQIA plus individuals face can not only make them more likely to use substances, but can also be related to less engagement in substance use disorder treatment. The use of substance use disorder treatment for LGBTQIA plus individuals has not been proportional to the need. This is due in part to the unique barriers that this population faces. Some of these barriers that prior research has seen include anticipated stigma from providers, too few providers equipped to deliver LGBTQAI plus affirming care, and a lack of mental health providers who are informed about mental health needs of LGBTQAI plus populations. The stigma and bias mentioned has been seen in providers that are present in substance use disorder treatment settings. These providers often don't provide LGBTQAI plus affirming care. There is not much research out there that looks at the availability and accessibility of LGBTQIA-specific programs in opioid use disorder treatment settings. To fill this research gap, Margaret Patchen-Wolf from the Columbia University Irving Medical Center and her colleagues mimicked the experience of searching for LGBTQAI plus specific services and medication for opioid use disorder in substance use disorder treatment facilities across the United States. The researchers did this by looking at the listings in the SAMHSA National Directory of Drug and Alcohol Abuse Treatment Facilities from 2018. The researchers based their study on an earlier study from 2007 that looked at general substance use disorder treatment programs that offered LGBTQIA+ services. The difference is that Patchen-Wolf and her colleagues looked at the availability of LGBTQIA+ specific services in addition to the availability of programs that offer medication for opioid use disorder in the states that had the top 20 highest national opioid overdose rates in 2017. To do this, the researchers first searched the 2018 treatment directory for facilities that are listed as providing both MOUD, or medication for opioid use disorder, and special programs or groups for LGBTQIA clients. The treatment directory has federal, state, and local government facilities, as well as private ones. Importantly, this directory is publicly available and can be accessed online, which helps to mimic the type of search that an LGBTQAI+ individual might do. The researchers had trained research assistants, or RAs, call each facility that the search identified. The RAs would ask identical questions about the advertised special programs or groups available for LGBTQAI+ clients and about the type of MOUD offered. These calls were made between January and October of 2020. Since COVID hit right during this time span, when the RAs were making their calls after COVID, they added a question about if those services were available before COVID. The researchers also looked at the availability of LGBTQAI+ specific services and MOUD in each state by 100,000 state population, then reported this availability in relation to the opioid overdose death rate by state. Whew, that's a lot. Some of the statistics the researchers used were straightforward descriptive statistics, which is just things like frequencies or percentages. The descriptives were used to describe the outcome of the calls, the overall number of facilities that offered LGBTQAI+ specific services, MOUD, and both LGBTQIA+ and MOUD. They also looked at the open-ended responses to questions to learn more details about the LGBTQIA+ services available. These findings were also separated by state and region. Once the researchers narrowed down the list of facilities to those that matched the criteria they were looking for, they ended up with a total sample of 570. 446 of those facilities answered the phone call questions. Now, for the reason we are here in this podcast, 366 of the 446, or 82% of the facilities that were reached, reported that they offer MOUD. There was a mixture of what medication they provided, with Suboxone being the most used, followed by buprenorphine, methadone, injectable naltrexone, and finally with the smallest number of facilities using injectable extended-release buprenorphine. Although a majority of the facilities reported having MOUD, only 125 of them, or about 28%, reported offering special programs or groups for LGBTQIA+ clients. Keep in mind, the facilities the researchers reached out to were all listed in the directory as offering both MOUD and LGBTQIA+ services. Okay, back to the LGBTQIA+ services. 82, or 18%, of the facilities reported having LGBTQIA+ friendly counseling, but not groups. 12 of the facilities, roughly 3%, reported having LGBTQIA specific groups, but not LGBTQIA+ friendly counseling, and 31, or about 7%, reported offering both. That means they had both LGBTQIA+ specific counseling and groups. There were also several facilities that reported their services were all-inclusive, or what they called open to everyone. While there were 125 facilities offering LGBTQIA+ specific services, 107, or about 90% of those 125, also offered MOUD. Interestingly, those numbers do not tell the whole story. There were also state and regional differences. in Maine, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Vermont, Washington, D.C., and West Virginia, 100% of the facilities that the researchers spoke to reported that they offered MOUD. For LGBTQIA plus services, more than 30% of the facilities in Missouri, Massachusetts, New York, and Michigan reported offering them. But then there were several states that didn't have any facilities offering both, which included New Mexico, South Carolina, and West Virginia. The state that has the highest rate of facilities offering both is Missouri. It came in at 50%. When looking at the programs per death rate, if we don't look at the three states that didn't have any facilities with both services, Illinois had the lowest rate and Michigan had the highest rate of programs per death rate. When the researchers looked at region instead of state, it showed that northeastern states are in the top two quarters of programs per death rate, while the southeastern states were in the bottom two quarters. Overall, only about 28%, or about a third, of the facilities that advertised having LGBTQIA+ specific services actually reported that they offer them. This just emphasizes the issue of limited availability of substance use disorder treatment services that are specifically tailored for LGBTQIA+ clients. When a facility has these services for substance use disorder treatment, it fosters positive treatment outcomes for them by reducing and/or eliminating the stigma and discrimination that go along with both sexual identity and substance use disorder. LGBTQIA+ individuals have a unique experience and unique vulnerabilities to both opioid use and overdose, which makes the need for LGBTQIA+ specific opioid use disorder treatment incredibly important. 70% of the facilities contacted by the researchers had LGBTQIA+ friendly counseling, but only about a third of them had any LGBTQIA specific groups. These groups can be very beneficial, as it helps to address social isolation and stigma and individualizes the treatment experience for clients, makes them feel like they're part of a community. One of the important things that came out of this study is that it presented the treatment directory that SAMHSA publishes with the opportunity to rethink how they are assessing whether facilities offer LGBTQIA+ services. As we learned, many of the facilities listed in the directory as offering these services or MOUD actually do not report offering those services. The authors recommend that there should be specific questions SAMHSA can ask about LGBTQIA+ services, such as, do you offer separate treatment groups for this population? And does staff receive training on sensitivity to LGBTQIA+ individuals? In this study, COVID also had a considerable impact on LGBTQIA+ services, with 19 facilities not offering the same services they offered prior to COVID. This is especially concerning because there was an increase in mental health stress and substance use among the LGBTQIA+ population. Well, really, among everyone, during the pandemic. Another finding of particular importance was the lack of LGBTQIA+ services for opioid use disorder treatment in southeastern states. States in the Southeast rank low on scales of being welcoming to and offering protections for LGBTQIA+ individuals. Basically, this region of the United States is a region that seriously needs LGBTQIA+ specific services, and it's the region that has the least of it. The researchers suggest that federal funding should be given to the Southeast to improve existing services. We need LGBTQIA+ specific services for opioid use disorder treatment at facilities that can also offer MOUD. We need these services and treatments to prevent overdose deaths for LGBTQIA+ people. One's sexual and or gender identity should never get in the way of treatment for substance use disorder or opioid use disorder. Recovery is hard enough. Let's find ways to meet people where they are and offer them individualized pathways toward better and healthier lives. Thanks for tuning in to ACEDIT, where we translate science into sense. You can find ACEDIT anywhere you listen to podcasts and check out our other offerings on JTech. That's www.jcoinctc.org/JTech. That's J-T-E-C. We consider it our mission to help everyone learn. On JTech, you'll find e-learning courses, webinars, and other trainings, all geared to help you learn about justice and health research and research methods quickly and easily. Special shout out here to George Mason University, home of the Coordination and Translation Center for JCoin, Sam Houston State University, and National Institute on Drug Abuse, and the National Institute of Health. Also, if you'd like us to break down some research that you've read or produced in a future episode of the podcast, send it to me at droods, R-U-D-E-S, at shsu.edu. See you next time on ACED It.